Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to recap some of what I talked about before about cover story, and I'm going to tell you some of the ways that you can begin to recover your undercover, and I'm going to play an interview with the outrageous, expressive, more than creative artist, Sue Kutno. So, hang on. Here come the show. Is all about discovering and becoming who you really are. As I say every week, most of us think that the we that we are demonstrating, the person that we're presenting to the world, the person we think of ourselves as, is almost always a limited version of who we really are. We decide very early in life what it is that we need to be. What are the qualities that are going to get us what we want and need? And what are the qualities that are going to get us into trouble, that are going to embarrass us, or maybe even get us into some danger? And these qualities, which are part of us, they come with the territory of being us, these qualities we hide undercover. The qualities that we demonstrate, the things that we say are true about ourselves, the way we present ourselves to the world, that's our cover story. You know, kind of like spies have cover stories. And they pretend that the identity that they are demonstrating is real because they know that if they are discovered, that the real them is discovered, they could be jailed or even killed. Well, we are doing the same thing, except we're not pretending. We really believe that our cover story is who we actually are. And that all the qualities which didn't fit with that cover story, which would have gotten us in trouble of one sort or another, those qualities we hide undercover. And I don't just mean we hide them from others, although that's how it starts out. Eventually, we do such a good job of hiding them that we forget that we have that capacity. Last week, I was telling you the story about Lucy, whose family encouraged her to be conscientious and responsible and hardworking. Lucy had an older brother who, they said, was a goof-off. He was lazy and you couldn't count on him. And Lucy had to spend much of her time cleaning up after her brother so that he didn't get into trouble, because he would make messes and he wouldn't clean them up. So his cover story was, I'm a screw-up. And Lucy, her cover story was, I'm a good girl. I do not only what is required for me, I do whatever is needed. Especially if somebody I care about gets into trouble or has a mess, I fix it. If you were listening last week, you know that Lucy came to see me because she was just about to burn right out. She was working nonstop for longer than her body and her psyche could really tolerate. And she didn't know what was wrong with her. She was depressed, she was exhausted, she was grumpy. And it didn't occur to her that she'd never had a vacation, that she didn't take time off, that her clients could always reach her wherever she was, that she was always on call, and that any request was like a command. She couldn't resist it. She couldn't decline it. That was her cover story. I do whatever it takes, whatever is necessary, whatever is asked of me. Also, if you were listening last week, you heard that during one of our sessions, she complained bitterly about her neighbor, who was lazy, couch potato, could spend the whole day just watching TV. And of course, that was an undercover quality of Lucy's, and the one she badly needed, the capacity to do nothing, to rest, to resist the temptation to do whatever it was that someone else wanted or needed or she decided needed to be done. So today I'm going to talk about another client of mine, someone who came up with a very ingenious way to talk about her undercover. This is Donna, and when she came to see me, she was frantic. Her alimony was about to run out, and she had to get a job. But she couldn't even make herself work on her resume. She was always a tireless volunteer worker, and she was very much in demand. Donna knew how to get and keep a job. Family and friends who were once encouraging her were now hounding her to begin her job search. "What is wrong with me?" she asked. It was Donna's dependent cover story that was stopping her from looking for work. She had role-modeled herself after her mother, who was, she said, very capable, but completely dependent on her dad. Like her mother, Donna kept her competence firmly undercover. Donna's cover was supported and validated by her family, not to mention her community's belief that a woman should work for her family, her friends, and her community, but not for money. In return for all this work, women could expect to be loved, cared for, and supported. Consequently, Donna believed that getting a job and exposing her competent undercover, the fact that she could actually work for money, would announce to the world her failure as a woman and cost her whatever love she might ever hope to have in the future. When Donna discovered her undercover, she called it her invisible ink reason. "Oh, I get it," she said. "There are all these reasons why you should do something, and then there's this one big reason why you shouldn't. Only it's written in invisible ink, so you can't see it. It's written in invisible ink because when you do see it, it's probably going to hurt. So it isn't until you can stand the hurt that you can find a way to read the invisible ink reason." Donna was right. She had many, many good reasons for getting a job. The only one invisible ink reason for not getting one was her belief that getting a job and exposing herself as a competent woman who could make money on her own, that undercover would cost her love and care. The reason was more than enough to keep her unemployed. Donna's reluctance to expose her undercover confirms the toughness of the task we all face in uncovering and validates the protective intention we all had when we placed a quality undercover. You can't admit to something you can't see, and when you can see it, when you're able to read your invisible ink reason, it is probably going to hurt. So until you can bear the hurt, you won't be able to read the reason. And until you can read the reason, you won't be able to do whatever it is that your undercover qualities would make possible for you. Last week I talked a lot about looking at yourself from this perspective, seeing whether you could be hiding a quality undercover which you really need, which you could use even if you don't really need it. Not everybody gets into this situation, the situation Lucy got in, where her health depended on her discovering her ability to take a rest, or Donna's situation, where her financial independence and security depended on her being able to surface this competence and violate her undercover and disprove her cover that she was just a woman who worked for family and friends and community. She didn't have a real job. So not everybody runs into that kind of conflict in their life, although a lot of people do. And when they do, they don't know what's wrong. So Lucy did not know that her ability to rest was an undercover quality that she really had. And Donna didn't know that she was hiding undercover this power woman that she had to keep a secret in order to be the woman that her family, friends, and community told her she had to be. So you don't have to run into a conflict to benefit from discovering what you might have been keeping undercover. When you surface an undercover quality that you have kept at bay, the first thing that happens is you get a tremendous amount of energy, because it takes energy to suppress a part of yourself. You're not aware that you're doing that. It's being done essentially for you by your psyche. But the minute that you release that quality, you also release all that energy. And there's a rush of additional passion, power, energy that you can use for whatever it is you want to. So it's really in your best interests to recover whatever you can that you have kept under wraps. But recovering is not an easy process. As I've been saying, in order to be whole, in order to be your complete self, it's important to question your cover story, that identity that you've been presenting and think of as me, all that there is to me, and to recognize, and to the extent that you can, to integrate whatever undercover qualities you've been hiding away. But this process usually contradicts everything your personal history has taught you about what is safe. You can see with Lucy that it was not really safe to do the kinds of things that would lend her to being called a goof-off or a screw-up, like her bad brother. And, of course, with Donna, that she was so afraid that getting this gift of being able to work for money was going to cost her something that, for her, was even more important. You originally designed your cover to meet whatever you understood were your parents' requirements. But you had very little information as a child. You may have misunderstood what they wanted or responded to some kind of accidental consequence or circumstance. Or you may have understood it perfectly and done what was required of you, thereby creating the ideal cover. But what worked then may not be working now. A quality that you've kept undercover for a lifetime may be the very one you need for something that you need to do in your life today. That means, without realizing it, you may be trying to turn yourself into somebody you already are. You may be pursuing something you already have. The person you've been trying to become, the quality you've been trying to cultivate, may already be there, sort of right under your covers. But attempting to unmask a cover and reclaim an undercover quality you have long denied is never an easy task. It's very difficult to surrender a disguise that you believe is responsible for bringing you love or security. Now and then, you may glimpse one or another of the qualities you deny. You may get a hint of an ability to be conservative or outrageous or difficult or responsible, for example, some things you had not previously been. But if you're not ready to survive the danger you'll face when you act on these qualities, you won't be able to acknowledge or utilize them, and in fact, you will probably feel shame when you see them in action. If you have begun to recognize some of your undercover qualities, maybe you've noticed your laziness or your slappiness or your self-confidence or your intelligence, any of the things that you have kept hidden even from yourself, don't try and display them now. For the time being, just observe them from a safe distance and continue to keep the secret. The idea that danger accompanies change is very real, and before you can risk making the dangerous changes, you need to know and prepare for the possible forms that your personal danger might take. So, if you notice, for example, that you have the temptation or the possibility or the inkling that you might be lazy and you feel shamed by that, just allow yourself to consider the possibility that there might be a good reason to be lazy. Any quality can be seen in a number of ways, both good and bad, depending on how you define them and how you were taught to believe about them. So, I'm hoping that all this information has begun to percolate down into your psyche and that your unconscious is beginning to be willing to show you maybe glimpses of those qualities which you have previously hidden from yourself. If you have begun to consider the possibility that you are actually more than you have been telling yourself and us that you are, if you recognize, have thought about, remembered the expression of a feeling or a way of being or a behavior that you really didn't like, you got a hint that you might be judgmental or selfish or aggressive or shy, but these qualities are not qualities that you think of as you. You have not been demonstrating them, and because they're undercover, you don't like them. So if you got a hint of that or an inkling of that, you shied away from it, you told yourself that that wasn't true, you really weren't like that, you didn't have to think about that. Be easy on yourself, because we put these qualities undercover for a very good reason, and, as I said a little earlier, uncovering them exposes us to a danger. So you wouldn't be able to rush into this in any case. In the coming shows, I'm going to be talking about the kinds of dangers that come up when we consider and when we actually do expose undercover qualities. So if you've always been the person who remembers birthdays or who has the holiday parties at your house or who mom calls when there's a catastrophe or who takes the siblings to the doctor, and you suddenly decide that you don't want to be the person with all that responsibility. You don't want to be the person that gets called. You want somebody else to have the party this year. That undercover you have the capacity to say, I don't feel like it. Whereas previously in your life, It had never even occurred to you to say, I don't feel like it. You didn't even recognize when you didn't feel like it, because to not feel like it was an undercover quality which you really didn't have permission for. And whenever you heard anybody say, well, I'm just not going to do that because I just don't feel like it, you judged them. And maybe there's a relative in your family who doesn't feel like it a lot, and you have contempt for that person. So the capacity to say, I just don't feel like it, is ugly to you, and therefore still hidden from you, although probably your life would be much improved if once in a while you could say, sorry, I just don't feel like it. Well, that is one of the dangers. The danger of recognizing that you actually are something that you used to have contempt for. I used to say, I have to be careful what I judge because I rapidly become it. Maybe this is true for you as well. So anyway, in the future shows, I'm going to be talking about the different kinds of dangers that you have to confront when you actually expose an undercover. But right now, I'm going to play an interview from my Anatomy of an Artist interview series. This interview is with artist Susan Cutno. As you certainly have heard in this show and in every show, I believe that we should all be becoming all that we really are, and that I interview artists because in order to be an artist in our culture, you really have to be what you really are. It's too hard to do unless you have no choice. And last week, I interviewed Vicky Rallo, who's an artist, also a fine artist, who discovered a talent she didn't know she had, that she was keeping undercover, pretty late, in her 30s or 40s, I think. Well, here we have Sue Cutno, who knew she was an artist before she could remember. She came in as an artist. Sue is an incredible example of what it looks like when you know from the beginning who you really are. You are encouraged in it, as she was by her family. You embrace it, you nurture it, you grow it, and it becomes everything you do. And that's who Sue is. So if you want to know what it looks like to be who you really are, listen to Sue. Okay, I am sitting here with Sue Cutno in her house, which is beautiful and, as always, in transition.
As always.
As always,
yes.
Okay. And Susan has no idea what I'm going to ask her or what we're going to talk about, but then nobody I interview ever does.
Right.
I do a series of interviews called Anatomy of an Artist. I interview people who make their living or their life with their art. This is so true of you.
Right.
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 And I always ask them the same question, and that is, how did this happen to you? How did you discover your interest in art? How did it capture you? How did it find you? How did you find it? When did it happen? Like that.
Many years ago.
Yes.
When I was a child, before I remember.
Yes.
I was an artist.
I believe you.
Okay. And all through my childhood, I always did art. My parents were very much in promoting art for me and my sister. They were artists. My father was a singer. My mother and father were both painters and musicians. And we always had art in the house. My mother was always sending me to lessons, take classes in this and take classes in that. And through the years,
So was there a particular art that you found yourself attracted to, or?
No, I remember there was a time that I was doing sketching, black and white, pencil sketching. I started oil painting with paint by numbers. Do you remember paint by numbers?
I do.
My God, I love that. That was so fabulous. I just love the smell of the oil paint. They really used oil paints at that time. There were no acrylics. And as I grew up, I just found more and more different venues to go into, and I'm always changing and I'm always going into everything. And embroidery, needlepoint, petty point for years and years and years. I used to draw my own canvases, and it would take me 2 years to sew a canvas.
Holy cow.
I didn't do little kits.
Right.
I had to do all that. I didn't really like counted cross-stitch or cross-stitch. I did all of that. I did macrame in the 60s. I mean, I did everything. Stained glass. I got into stained glass through my sister, who moved out to California, and she told me that she was doing stained glass, and she came visiting me once. And we just did stained glass together. I was hooked, and I was in that business for about 4 years. Of course, everything turns into a business because, you know, you do so much of it for friends, and then you just keep doing it, and after a while, it costs you a lot of money. So you start charging, and then you start getting other people, and then you're in business, and the hobby turned to business. And I did stained glass for about 4 years, and I got lead poisoning.
Aye, aye.
Uh-huh. And the doctor said to me, that's it, you're finished, you cannot do this anymore. So I stopped doing stained glass, was walking around depressed. I had this whole studio in the basement. I kicked my kids out of the basement. That was their playroom. Mm-hmm. And my sister came to the rescue again, and she told me about fused glass. Now, this was in the beginning of the 80s. Never heard of it. Went to my stained glass store. He never heard of it. So they were doing it on the West Coast, Northwest, and Oregon, and Seattle, and that's the land of glass out there. And I found out about fusing. I told my stained glass guy he's got to get fusible glass in, and that was the beginning. And so I started in the 80s. In the 90s, I won an award from Corning Museum of Glass for my technique and new innovations that I was coming up with fusing. And
how did you learn?
Oh, I just learned by trial and error. There were no teachers. There was one woman in Manhattan that was doing some fusing, and I got in touch with her.
She were living in New Jersey still.
I was still living in New Jersey, and she did not teach. Her name was Ronnie Wolf. And she did not teach, and I begged her. I said, just let me come up there and watch you and see what you're doing, and then I could take it from there. And I went up there, and I ended up going there 3 times. She was in Lower Manhattan. She had a loft before lofts were lofts. Oh, my God, it was so beautiful. And we just played with glass, and I came home, and my brother-in-law bought me a little ceramic kiln. There was no such thing as glass kilns. There were no molds for forming your glass. I used to use Campbell's soup cans. and that started it. And then I won the award from Corning in the 90s, and then in the year 2000, by this time I was in Florida. We moved here in 91, 92. In the year 2000, I opened up Sarasota School of Glass. Mm-hmm. I started with 3 teachers and something like 5 different classes, stained glass beading, fusing, maybe 3 classes. And then up until 2008, I had 11 teachers and 30 classes,
wow.
And we were doing well. And then 2009 came.
Yes.
And now the school is closed.
Yes.
Because there is nobody that has discretionary money anymore.
Right.
So I just closed the school instead of knocking my brains out in advertising and just wasting money on that. And that's how I am where I am now.
Oh, wait a minute. Then there was the... Talk about all the other things in the meanwhile, the backsplashes, the lamps.
Right.
I only know a few of them, but
right.
But you kept permutating.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Forgot because you're now in your new thing. I know.
So many things
I know.
That I've done. Good, you reminded me. I had decided to do lampshades, glass mm-hmm. lampshades. There were glass lampshades made out of stained glass.
Mm-hmm.
So why couldn't I slump them?
Right.
Slumping.
You should talk a little bit about fusing
and
slumping because probably the people who are listening don't know.
Okay. Fusing. Easy way to tell you about fusing. You take compatible glass, which means glass that has the same expansion and contraction rate in the heat.
Mm-hmm.
And different companies make glass to do this. The first company was Bullseye Glass, so we'll just use them as an example. Bullseye Glass is 90 coefficient, so you have to, if you're going to use 90 coefficient glass, it doesn't matter what company it comes from, it has to be 90 coefficient, COE. So you take glass, and then you have to have a mold. So, you know, a ceramic mold is a piece of bisque that if you go to a ceramic store and you put glazes on and you have a bowl, and you put it on your table, they fire the bowl with all your glazes. Well, that's what we use, only you don't fire, you don't glaze the bowl. You drill holes in it for air holes.
Right, so it doesn't explode?
Let's say you have a 12-inch bowl round.
Right.
You cut out a 12-inch round piece of glass.
Right.
Now you have a flat piece of glass.
Right.
Then you take little scrap and you take other pieces of glass and you make a design on top of it.
Right.
Then you take this whole 12-inch piece, you put it in the kiln, flat on the shelf, and you fire it to about 1500 degrees. That's called fusing. When you take it out, you now have one piece of glass with your design melted into it.
Okay.
Then you take that. That takes 24 hours. It has to cool down because it goes up to 1500. Then the next day, you take that piece of glass and you put it on top of your mold. You have washed your mold with a separator, which means you paint your mold with a brush and you put a separator on because you don't want your glass touching the ceramic.
Ah.
Okay? Because the ceramic and the glass expand and contract at a different rate, and it'll break your glass.
Ah.
So you put the separator on the mold. You put the glass on top of your mold. You have a 12-inch piece of glass that you put on top of a 12-inch, let's say, a 12-inch bowl.
Okay.
You take the whole thing and put it in the kiln. And you put it on to about between 12 and 1300 degrees, depending on how deep the mold is.
Okay, I'm stopping this because that's the oven saying that our lunch is ready. So we had lunch.
Yes.
And where we were was how you were explaining...
We already fused the glass.
Yes, that's correct.
And
then you put it on, right, you put it on, you've already put it, you've sealed it, or whatever that is, separator?
I put the separator on the mold, I put the glass, let the separator dry, because
right.
You cannot put anything in the kiln wet, because it'll explode.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay, so now you put the glass on top of the mold, you
right.
Take the whole thing, you put it in the kiln,
right.
And you fire it to between 12 and 1300 degrees, because
okay.
It's only slumping.
Okay.
Okay? That also takes 24 hours. Everything takes 24 hours or more, unless you're using a teeny tiny tabletop kiln. Next day you go and you take it out, and what happens is the glass melts in the form of the mold.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you drilled, remember we drilled holes?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the reason is because when the glass pushes down, it has to push the air somewhere.
Ah.
Otherwise you get a big bubble in the glass. So the air comes out of the holes, and that's why you drill the holes. And now, voila, you have a bowl that looks the same as the ceramic bowl, only you made it in glass with all kinds of designs on it and colors,
and
that's slumping.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
So you did slumping and fusing.
Yes.
And then you started the school.
Yes.
And then the bottom fell out of everything, so you closed the
school.
Yes. Oh, yes, right.
But in the year 2000 also,
right.
That was a pivotal year, I got up one morning, took a shower, came out of the shower dripping wet, woke my husband up, and told him we're going into the mold business.
Oh, my God.
Because I decided that in the shower, that's where I do all my thinking. Because there were no slumping molds, you had to go to restaurant supply stores or you had to go to ceramic stores. Restaurant supply stores, you would get the stainless steel bowls,
mm-hmm.
The mixing bowls.
Right.
Because you can only, you could only slump on stainless steel. You can't slump on stainless steel mixed with an alloy or aluminum.
It has to be pure.
It has to be stainless steel. So we would have gotten that from the restaurant supply stores or the ceramic molds from the ceramic people. But there was no one place to go to at the time. So I decided we're going to do a mold business.
Mm-hmm.
And April is the glass convention in Las Vegas, And in April, we had a little catalog with 35 molds. And today, we are the largest mold company in the world.
Wow!
We now have 200 plus molds, probably 300 molds now.
Wow.
And we also have display stands now. And, you know, we make our own display stands. Everything is made in the USA. We don't go to China. A lot of the mold companies now get their things from China and Italy. And they've been having a lot of problems getting the stuff. But we were a little more expensive, but everything is made in the USA.
Good. Okay,
and we
good.
Have that all over our website. So anyway, and so now the school is closed.
Okay, now wait a minute.
Okay.
You didn't talk about the lamps or the
lampshades.
Or the, right, right? Or the little balls on the end of those things at Selby Gardens or the...
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
I know. There was a lot of things in between. Well, I made lamps, so I decided to make glass lampshades because of stained glass lampshades. So we make over cylinders. We slump large pieces of glass over cylinders, and when it's cooled off, we turn them over, and you have big vases.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, if I make the base a little bit wider, why can't I make lampshades? So
right.
I did. So I had these stainless steel molds made at certain sizes, and I would slump glass and drill holes on the top, which was the bottom if you're using it as a vase, but when you turn it over, it's a lampshade.
Right.
And drill holes in it for the heat to come out when your light bulb is on so it doesn't break the glass. And then on the bottom, I would use all kinds of fringes and beads and all kinds of things
decoration.
To decorate the lampshade. And I was selling lampshades.
Yeah.
All different sizes. Then I went into the tile business and was doing... I do tiles, and I do backsplashes, and I do bathrooms, and all kinds of tiles. And
I just want to stop and say, it's glaringly apparent, but of course I know this because I know Susan, that her mind has never stopped.
Never.
It just keeps inventing new from wherever she starts. She expands it and develops it and creates new of it.
Right.
Right.
I have a little pencil and paper next to my bed when I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning because I'm thinking of things while I'm sleeping. I write everything down because in the morning I'll never remember. So what else?
But actually it wouldn't matter if you didn't remember because something else would come
in. Something else would take its place. Right.
I know.
Definitely.
Okay, so the school has closed, and
yes.
You're not actively doing lampshades or backsplashes unless somebody calls you and asks you for them,
definitely.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
And just right now, I want you to give the website. Is there a website for the molds that's separate from?
Yes.
Yes. Give all of them now, and I'll give them again later.
Okay. The molds for the slumping molds and display stands. It is www.firelite.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then I have a separate website just for display stands, which is futureformsstands.com
mm-hmm.
with S's in it. Then my my studio site is Firelight Glass. Also spelled L-I-T-E, firelightglass.com.
Okay.
And then I have a few more websites, but they're not up on the web right this second.
Right. But that brings us, right? I didn't realize this when I said it, but actually that brings us to what you are now doing.
Correct.
You can see that Susan spent a great deal of time designing websites.
Correct.
For her various businesses.
Right.
And so now?
Now I am designing websites. Because of the economy.
Yes.
Thank you, China. Thank you, big box stores. Glass has gone in the basement.
Wow.
There is, you know, if we... Oh, by the way, we had a gallery.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. We had a gallery when we moved to Sarasota. We had a gallery from 91-92 until... I don't know. We had it for about 12, 13 years.
Yeah, Glass Reflections.
Glass
on
Reflections.
Palm Avenue in Sarasota.
Correct. We had this gallery, and then came 9/11, and then the bottom fell out.
Yeah.
And then China came in. And then the big box stores. And they're bringing in glass from China that is copying Murano glass and all the good, the big companies and the big studios. And they're selling it for $19.95. We cannot sell a piece of glass for $300 if you can buy something comparable in wherever for $19.95. And I totally understand that. You know, it hit everybody's pocket.
Right.
So we finally came to the decision that we're going to close the gallery. So we closed the gallery. And then this year I closed the school because nobody has discretionary money.
Right.
But hopefully I will open the school again.
Yeah.
And that takes us to now, where I wanted to get back into, oh, I did this whole new technique of glass.
Oh, wait a minute.
What?
The book.
Oh, that's right. I wrote a book. I forgot about that. I wrote a book, Everything You Wanted to Know About Fusing But Had No One to Ask.
Uh-huh.
And
it's gorgeous. The book is gorgeous.
And it's very, very successful. It's in its third printing. Corning Museum of Glass. No. Yes, Corning Museum of Glass was carrying it. And now there's, oh, I forgot the name of the museum in Seattle, Washington, just ordered.
Great.
For their gift shop, they ordered the book. So, and a lot of the teachers around the country are using it. Anyway, anything else that I did that I can't remember?
Right. This is what friends are for, right?
Right. So anyway, that brings us up to today. And just a couple of weeks ago, I came to the decision that I'm not going to be working in my studio for a while because I've taken a survey of different galleries in the area and different galleries in the Northwest, and glass is not top anymore. It's back to, there's always seasons, so to speak.
Cycles.
Cycles of different artwork. And in the 80s, it was pottery, ceramics, jewelry always. And then in the 90s, up until a year or two ago, it was glass. I mean, you go into a gallery and 90% of the gallery would have glass, some kind of glass art in it. I just took a survey of all the galleries, and we're back to pottery and clay and a lot of fiber, a lot of fiber. No glass. So I decided that I'm going to hold off on glass for a while. So what am I doing? I'm building websites.
Yes, and you should tell now what the websites are and how they can find them.
Okay, I have a lot of websites. I have four on the table that are not up yet.
No, give the ones that are up.
Okay, the ones that are up is firelightforms.com.
Right.
Firelightglass.com. Futureformsstands.com. Glass Art Warehouse. I think Glass Art Warehouse is still up. .com might not be. But probably by the end of the year, they'll all be up. I am now working on a candle and bath website.
Mm-hmm. So that people could come to the website and get candle and bath accoutrement.
It's going to be candle and bath. Firelight, candle, and bath. .com.
Uh-huh.
It will be,
yeah.
But it's not yet.
Yes.
And then I am doing a website, an informational website for glass artists to find out where there are workshops and schools all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing that. That's on the table. And then I'm doing an ecology website. Everything ecology, ecological, everything like artwork. There are people that do artwork from They recycle product they do artwork, so I want to have artwork on there and, you know, the rain barrels and, you know, just things like that. So I'm going to have an ecology website. I am going to do a wedding website no matter how bad the economy is. People get married.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to have a baby website.
Because no matter what,
people have to buy baby furniture and things for the baby.
Right.
And so those are the other two I'm going to have. I'm probably going to have a reading eyeglass website.
Oh, I want one of those.
That one's called eyeglassheaven.com. So that'll be coming up.
All those are one of those, the ones that, that pull apart?
Yeah, the magnetic ones, and I'll have other
You'll have
ones
to let me know.
That's a good one. So all these websites I hope to have by this winter. Mm-hmm. It is very, very, very time consuming to do websites. To put the pictures on and little descriptions is no big deal. But you have to do the backroom work, all the meta tags and keywords and description and all that other information, so you're not on page 1 million of Google, you're on page 1
right,
of Google.
Right, right, right.
Firelight Forms I did 3 years ago, and in 1 month I was on the first page of Google and Yahoo.
Wow.
And the second page. And the
so have you not thought of doing websites for other people?
I don't have time. I want to do it for me. I've been successful with it, and this is going to be my income now, because obviously retail stores are a thing of the past.
Right, right, right.
Right now they are. I mean, retail stores are closing all over the place.
Let me ask you, is there anything I didn't ask you that I should be asking you? Anything that you remember that I forgot?
Who remembers?
Yeah, right. Okay, never mind.
I've written a book. I've written poetry. I've had that published. Starting businesses. I also work in the garden. I love to do gardening.
Yes, and you also remodel.
I remodel houses.
I've never known a moment in all the time I know you that some house is not being re-something. Right.
First weekend I moved into this house, I didn't even open my cartons. I just knocked down the kitchen wall. My husband gave me a big sledgehammer, and down came the wall. And that's what we do. We just take down walls and move things around.
You make something new out of everything.
Right.
That is what you do.
Right.
Okay, so do you, just think for a second, is there anything that you would want to say about what it's like to live a life that is so incredibly dedicated to art?
Well, you know, it seems crazy to go from one thing to another thing to another thing to another thing. But, you know, some people say, oh, you failed in this, so you go to the next thing. I don't look at it as failing in something. I look at it as a new experience and being very aware of when that part of your life is over, or, you know, like the glass now. I intend to come back to it. I don't intend to leave it. My studio is still there, and when I'm in the mood and just want to relax and get away from everything, I'm going to go into my studio. And I still have ideas that I want to do. But right now, I have to make a living. And right now, I'm doing my websites, and which doesn't mean that I failed in glass, because I didn't.
No, and you know what I
just
hear?
Just put it on the back shelf.
What I hear is that an extreme amount of flexibility.
Definitely.
You know, you know the expression, life is easier when you ride the horse in the direction it's going?
Uh-huh.
You're always doing that. You're mm-hmm. always taking the measure of how things are going. Are they going right? Are they going, well, good, then I'll stay here. They're not, okay, fine, I'll go over here. And I think that that is really a hallmark of what a creative person is. It, you know, they talk about the, you know, the willow that bends with the wind, right,
yeah.
instead of, you know, standing there and breaking.
Right.
And I really think that is what it means to be creative, that you feel whether something is right, whether it's working, whether it's time or whatever,
right.
and you don't insist that something that isn't is.
Right. I have a saying that's up in my studio, if you love what you do, you never have to go to work in the morning. it's not a job.
No.
You know, and that's another measure. You know, if I go in and I say, oh God, I hate being here, I'll turn around and go, because life is too short. You know, you've got to, I know you have to put food on the table, and I know you have to, you know, pay your bills and everything. But go find something that you love to do and make your money.
Well, this is a great place to stop.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Susan.
You're so very welcome. It was a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
So that's my friend Sue Cutno. And as you can tell, Sue is the living, breathing, example of what I try and talk about in this show. A person who is now and has always been, since before she could remember, so deeply connected to who she is that it spills out of her moment by moment. That when she's sleeping, she has to get up in the middle of the night to write down the ideas so that they don't escape. So that they find her in the shower and they find her in the car, and she, if she can make something new about out of something that is, then she will. And everything is her palette. Glass is her palette. Her house is her palette. The walls that she takes down are her palette. Anything that she can knit or crochet or whatever, all those macrame things she was talking about in the 60s, she can take any art form and expand it and turn it into something it wasn't before. And then she sees what the art form needs. So if molds are difficult to come by, well, then molds are what she'll provide. It is the constant exploration of how things can be new. Does this plant work here? Okay, good. No, take it out, plant something else. It is the constant exploration of how everything can be more than it was. She dreams, and then she does. And it's a gift, really, to know, Susan. And I'm hoping that you heard it, that deep connection to the creativity that makes her who she is. The real knowing, minute to minute. You know, she said that thing about, oh, I come to work and I don't like it, I turn around and go someplace else. She's always in touch with who she is and whether it's working for her. And so Susan never has to go to work in the morning because her life is a joyous thing. So, okay, we can't all be Sue Kutno. And that's because we can't all have come from a family that encouraged, applauded our every discovery, experiment. Most of us are discouraged by our childhoods. So I'm wondering, are you thinking about how you started out? Are you thinking about those early experiments that you made? So much depends, of course, as I talk over and over again in these shows, I talk about how we create a cover story. A cover story which says, I am or I am not creative. Do you know how many people I know who say, oh, I'm just not creative? This is insane. Nonsense. We come into the world with creativity. The goo-goo gaga. The crayon drawing, the messing with mud. Everything we do is an expression of our trying to make something new, do something new, invent something, be something, create something. So, you know, as I've said, Susan was given the gift of incredible encouragement by two people who had also got that gift, who also were able to embrace their own creativity. So, of course, as this show is entirely about you and your discovering and being able to become all that you are, I'm hoping that you got a chance to think back, on the kinds of things you might have wanted to do. You know, as I'm talking about this, I'm remembering that when I was a kid, you know, I'm very dyslexic, and so directions are really hard for me to follow. And in those early experiences in kindergarten and in day camps, in arts and crafts, I got everything wrong. I couldn't figure out how to do the lanyard. I remember that very clearly. All kinds of things didn't make sense to me. And so I created a cover story which said, I'm just not, you know, artistic. I can't do anything with art. Luckily for me, there were other things that I could do and I was encouraged to do, so I got them. But I went through life thinking art that had something to do with somebody else, and I pretty much ignored it. And after I got out of college, I became a group worker. That's a whole other story, but I was running groups, and one of the things you do with groups is arts and crafts. So I took this college course in group activities, and in this course, we were encouraged, I remember very clearly, although it must be 40 years ago, to do two artistic projects. One of them was the creation of a mask, and the other was a clay figure. And I did them both. And I made a clay swan, and I just loved it. I thought it was beautiful. And it made me cry. I can almost cry now, thinking, oh my God, I wonder if I am artistic. I wonder if I do have some ability to create art. You know, I was in my 20s, right? So I have explored some of those things now, not nearly what I would have done if I had not had this cover story when I was 6 or 8 or 10. So what is yours? What's your cover story about your creativity? Do you have permission to draw, to paint, to dance, to sing, to write, to something else, to knit, to crochet, to make jewelry? Well, I hope that if you don't, you're considering it now, considering the risk. It's so well worth it. So before I end this show, let me thank yet again, as always, Josh Hackney, who, without whom I could not be doing the show in any number of ways. And to tell you that if you need help with the computer, IT, recording, electronics, you want Josh Hackney, and that you should go up on my website, if I forgot to tell it to you, which I sometimes do, thelynnshow.com, THELYNNE, don't forget the ESHOW, say I want Josh, or email me, tell me anything you think about, anything I've said in this show or any other show, ask me any question. And as always, I hope that you got something that you could use from this show, something that interested you, compelled you, titillated you, something that brings you back. Because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And boy, I hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retired. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing. unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang, no, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang, rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it is.